ECHIDNA CSI stands for ECHIDNA Conservation Science Initiative. And we're really excited that we've officially launched this today. And we're doing this really because I think the echidna is an ideal species to involve scientists. Because if, as a researcher, if you go out and actually trying to find a echidna, it can be very challenging. But you know, if you talk to people, most people have seen the echidna either in their backyard or bushwalking. So there's this enormous potential for people, you know, in these days using phone apps. We've developed an app that people can download, and hopefully lots and lots of people will do that. When they see an echidna, they'll just take a photo and submit it to this app, and that way we'll generate a lot of great information about, where these wonderful animals are, because they're really interesting because they're basically the most widespread mammal in Australia, and still we lack a lot of information about, about the numbers and the distribution. So I think it's really important in that way.
I understand the population in Tasmania is quite healthy in numbers, and is it also healthy in its the well-being of the creatures, Frank?
Yeah, so in Tasmania, really fortunate that there's been some, wonderful work done by, in particular by Stuart Nicol, University of Tasmania, studying, and you're quite right that there's quite a few animals in Tasmania, which has also facilitated, this great work. But we still need to be very vigilant. The other extreme is we have at our doorstep, which is the other population that has been extensively studied, which is in Kangaroo Island, where which is now the first population that has been declared endangered. So obviously, people would have seen echidnas on the side of the road, either alive or unfortunately often dead. So roadkill is a big problem, but what we see also in Kangaroo Island in particular is feral animals, pigs and cats. So there is real threats to echidna populations. And they're generally probably a species that is reproducing relatively slowly. So I think we have to really capture that information about the numbers and the distribution to make sure that there's really healthy populations in the future.
What are the native predators to the echidna?
Well, certainly in terms of puggles, and the little echidna babies are called puggles. For example, natural predators. I mean, in Tasmania, Tasmanian devil. They have certainly, if they would get hold of one, they would, eat it. In Kangaroo Island, Rosenberg guanas, or guanas in general, reptiles, the puggles are deposited in the burrow and then nursed by their mother. So if, snakes or, guanas and reptiles wouldn't have no problem of killing and consuming the small echidnas.
Is environmental change and the change of their environment affecting populations as well?
Yeah, it's one thing that hasn't been studied in great detail, and that's hopefully something where we'll be able to gather some data, because as you, and climate change, of course, is one thing, but agricultural landscapes, mining, use of water in this country, will all have effects on echidna population, and this will hopefully be a really long-term study. There's some data, of course, and now we capture more data, so we will be able to estimate what the effects of environmental change are going to be on echidna population, but also how it affects their biology. So what we would like to understand by that is, if the farmer is out in the field, if people are in the bush, but also in the urban areas, when do people see echidnas and how frequently do they see echidnas? Because often it's not, it's hard to observe that or estimate that from the outside, how environmental change is actually affecting the population structure or population numbers. So it's really important to get those data.
Frank Grutzner, with the information that people may supply through the app with photographs, are echidnas distinct enough to be able to visually distinguish between animals so that you can tell that you're not just getting the same creature photographed five times, that they are different animals?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, there is, you can certainly see individual differences in echidnas, and that's, of course, where the second big aspect of this project, which I think makes this project quite unique, is that we're also trying to capture some genetic information. So absolutely, you know, if the animal is in the area and it's seen by people frequently, then there's a possibility that we, you know, look at the same animal. Certainly, you know, you can identify some individual differences. But if you can, of course, would be able to genetically monitor populations, and that's where the SCAT sample comes in as well. So we can obtain genetic information from SCAT samples that people will hopefully identify and send to us. And that would really answer also a really important question and how mobile these populations are. Animals sticking around, and certainly there's data from animals that have been observed in certain regions for many years, but young animals, they will most probably move out into new areas. And getting some genetic information on these animals will give us a much better picture of how they move around and, you know, what the influxes of new animals into populations and animals moving away.
Also, information about the health of the animals as well. Do you get that from the DNA?
Yeah, and that's, again, where the SCATs or the pool comes into it. It's really rich on information. It's also not easy to work with. But if you actually think about it, you know, so you get DNA there from the animals that have been consumed by the echidna. So all the ants, grubs, and whatever they eat. And, you know, that will be very interesting. But there's also DNA, of course, in the SCAT sample from the echidna itself. What we're also trying to do is then to establish, once we got the samples and can analyze them, is to actually look at hormones. And that will tell us whether the animal, for example, was actively mating. You know, the breeding season is now still happening. But, you know, we could potentially also measure things like stress. We might also find DNA from parasites, you know, in the echidna. So as we develop these tests, hopefully we will be able to, you know, gather information about their diet, you know, about their breeding, you know, breeding season, but also stress levels and potentially parasites, which will, of course, give us a fairly good picture, you know, how healthy the animal is.
How can you pick the echidna scat from the other scat in the bush, Frank?
So... Excuse me. So important in this whole project is also the educational value. So really people learning about the animal's biology, but also to learn how to identify a SCAT sample, which is you can do relatively easily. It's cylindrical shape. It's probably, you know, about 4 centimeters long. Usually it's quite dry, so it's okay to handle it. And you, if you take actually a closer look, you often see a lot of the exoskeletons from all the ants and termites, but they also eat other things that the animal has consumed. So in that way, it's quite distinct from, you know, marsupial scat samples. Mm. So we'll have some pictures there to give people a bit of an idea of the size and what to look for. And so, yeah, if you have a close look, you should be able to distinguish it.
What's the best place for people to head to get more information about the program and to be able to find out about the app?
Yeah, the easiest way would be if I just did a Google search with Echidna CSI, and that should get us to our webpage. They can also search on Facebook for Echidna CSI, and that would give them the information on how to and where to download the app. And then we'll also continually upload educational information that is related to the project, but also general information about these animals.